It is 9:35, let's say. Could we get a call to, or I'm sorry, could we get a roll call, please?
Andrew Everode. Peter Lee.
Present.
Jason Madison. David Schwartz.
Here.
Paul Stanton.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Great, thank you. This next agenda item is a call to the public, and we do have a public member here. Keith, and you want to, do you have something for the agenda, or do you have something in addition to the agenda?
I've got one agenda item that you're going to be talking about later. I just wanted to bring it up because I don't know if you allow us to talk or not.
There's a good chance, but if you're here for that agenda item, there's a very, very good chance. If you have anything in it that's not within the agenda, we wouldn't be able to take action on it today, but you're welcome to mention whatever
you
have.
Keith Smith is my name.
Thank you.
Inspection training of Arizona, and I know you guys are aware of my dispute with a new parallel inspectors change, and I just wanted to get a couple clarifications on this, on a couple things. The minutes, I've been reviewing the minutes of 2016 when it was introduced, and the minutes don't seem to talk about whether the board discussed, does anybody on this committee offer parallel inspections?
I do.
You do.
We do too. My company does.
Oh, we can't.
We can't converse during.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. So, all right. So that's good to know. During the vote itself, was that discussed?
During calling the public, you can say something to the board, but they can't really interact with you. If these are things that pertain to an agendized item, they'd be able to interact with you, but you can't really ask questions of the board or call the public. You'll only be able to present them with information.
All right, can I move this down to 5D then?
Only the chair would be able to
if it's pertinent to the conversation we're going to have, we'll ask those types of questions of you,
okay.
I would say.
All right. That's fine. I'll hang around then. How do I request an economic study? I did that at the BTR meeting. I never got one.
Actually, if you want to contact board staff, they'd be able to do it outside of the meeting.
So separately? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. I see no one else from the public, so moving on to the adoption of the minutes from the September 12th meeting. Let's see. I don't have my copy here. And it wasn't in this packet we were given, I don't think, either.
Yeah, it's just under the minutes.
Just online here.
Yep, just on here.
It should be 4A.
4A. Yeah, that'll look good to me.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion we accept the minutes as written.
And second. The second, okay.
There is one correction that I see. My name says Kevin and it's Keith.
Oh, right.
5B.
Right, 5B, yep. We can make a correction to the spelling of the first name.
Mr. Chairman, I make a motion that we accept the minutes with the revision as written.
And second. We'll second that as well. Great. Okay. Do we have any additional discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor of approving the minutes as amended with the spelling change from Kevin to Keith?
Aye.
Say aye. Aye. Motion passes. Minutes approved. Agenda item number 5A is whether to recommend that a home inspector serve on the board. Somebody want to kick that off?
I suppose I will. I was taking a look at the makeup of the board. I see there's 3 engineers, as I understand it, 2 architects. And I understand the board members, they're appointed by the governor, is
they
that
are.
Correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's appointed position. Okay. So, as I recall the history here on how we got to where we were, we've always felt that we the home inspectors, were pretty well represented on the board, both with your predecessor and yourself. There may be some leverage reasons why we may choose to have, you know, direct representation on there. I don't know. But looking at the pros and cons of if that makes sense for us to take a serious look at it and what that might look like. I don't really see any cons to it. I see some possible benefits to it, but I don't know that we've been harmed in any way by not having that level of representation. But then I also think that as our profession is maturing, both state and nationally, it may be time at some point, and it is that point now, for us to take a hard look at it.
I guess my thoughts are that since we do have a number of the complaints that come into the agency, we have a fair percentage there, it might be advantageous to the board to at least at times have a representative, maybe one of the committee members there to assist in that way. And I don't know if we take the leap to being a participant in the board activities, there'd be a lot of it outside of our purview, and I don't know if any of the board members get the ability to just abstain because it's outside their scope, their area of expertise kind of thing, or if that just doesn't represent a good board member if you're not able to engage in
probably all or
matter.
Yeah. Do you want to talk to it, Scott, or do you want...
Sure.
I mean, I'm happy to.
Yeah, there is a...
Oh, in the middle of this donut.
I'm sorry.
Coffee and
donut. Sorry,
Scott. Law enforcement. being on the board, you're not restricted as a board member to only topics that you have a background, a professional knowledge of. And in fact, one of the benefits of having a board oversee professions is you have a mix of people who are from the industry and people who are not specifically in that industry. So you get more of a general, broad overview. So I think from a standpoint of legally looking at the makeup of the board, there's no requirement that a home inspector only be on the board to handle home inspection. It would actually be a benefit to have somebody coming from a different professional background to look at, say, architectural or engineering issues. So that shouldn't really enter into a question of whether or not there should be a home inspector on the board.
Well, and I would add, too, that because we have 2 board members appointed as liaisons on this committee, they have a better understanding from being on this committee about what you do and how things are done here, and they participate in conversations when cases come before the board about home inspectors. And because we have the investigators trained to do both home inspection EACs as well as like engineering EACs, the system is more uniform. So the board is seeing the same basic format in investigative reviews for home inspectors as they do with engineers. And we have Mr. Parlin and the investigators who do, you know, move between the committee and the board. So I'm hoping that represents stability, consistency, and fairness, I think, when the board reviews material that has to do with home inspectors. Also, I'm not sure if you know, Mr. Leeds is now sitting on our Legislation and Rules Committee, so he is providing, obviously he isn't shy, so he provides input on everything, but if there are issues that come up specifically about home inspection, then Peter, you know, he's a great advocate, so he's mm-hmm. there to explain to the other members if they have questions and represents the industry really well there. So
those are members of the board that
former
are in that
board members from the different professions. Okay. They don't meet as regularly as you guys do, but they are there to talk about like substantive issues regarding board plans to modify rules or to talk about possible legislation that we want to pursue in the coming session.
I guess, right as it was said, I've never felt underrepresented at the board at all, but I guess if we didn't have a architect or engineer member as in our committee, it could happen, you know, if
sure.
we ended up with somebody who was not well versed in our world, then I would feel more underrepresented.
I honestly, you know, think that the way the statute, when home inspectors became part of this board and the committee was created in statute, was really well written because it did provide for, you know, a member or two of the board to sit on this committee. So that's how, you know, it's supposed to function. They're supposed to bring the issues that are discussed here and the concerns up to the full board. So hopefully, I think that's how it's working.
Not to mention it's a lot of work.
I'm sure.
The package that they
the
get
board
them is phenomenal.
They would be brutal.
You would
I'm
need 2 days
sure.
to get through it.
No, I know. Yes, who would want to? Yeah. We could say, yeah, let's do it, and then nobody wants to do it.
Yeah.
Do you see any benefit, Melissa, to us having that increased representation?
Well, I don't want to say no, because there's always benefits, but I think you guys are right to say, is this the right time? Do we want to wait and review? I don't see that there's been any problem with how things are functioning now, honestly. You know, if we saw a huge increase in the numbers of home inspectors and applicants, but right now you guys are running pretty smoothly, in my opinion.
And, you know, keep in mind, it would be more of a structural change than adding a home inspector. There has to be an even number on the board.
Mm.
So either we would have to drop one of the sitting board members, or we would have to add two board members.
Mm.
So it's a little more complicated just because of that. We don't want to have a situation of split votes.
Right. Seems like the engineers are a little heavy.
Yeah, well, they are, there's probably
largest
about
right?
20,000 registered engineers, which is about half our registered population are engineers. So they have three members, one of whom has to be a civil, because there are 10,000 civils. So it really is kind of, the way it works out, the representation really sort of follows the numbers of registrants. Architects are the next biggest group. There's about 6,000 registered architects, so they have two members, and then each of the other professions has the one.
Right.
So,
have there been times in the past where the BTR board has differed from the recommendations of this committee and said, no, we don't agree with this committee, or pushed it back to the committee for more consideration?
Push back.
Mm-hmm. Occasionally they do, but only after thorough discussion and review.
Okay.
But I don't have, I mean, it's not a significant number, to be completely honest.
Right.
I think they respect the EAC findings. And
it more has to do with disciplinary action?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah, if they push back, it'll be because they'll want a higher fine or a lower fine, or it's because, not because there was an issue that they felt the EAC failed to discuss,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And by pushback, I didn't mean disagreeing. I meant that they have brought things back to this committee saying we would like more input
right.
from the committee. Yeah.
More information.
Mm-hmm.
But all in all, yes. they do respect our committee.
And beyond
and
that,
the EAC committees as well.
Melissa will advocate for us too and give the spirit of
the discussion.
Yeah, no, I
understand.
And,
As does Mr. Carlin.
Right.
And the investigators that have taken part in the EACs. One of the things I think Doug and I are really proud about is making, before we came, the investigators didn't interact with the board members. And often they understand the cases
better
because they've lived with them so much longer. And now, you know, we make sure they're able to dialogue with the board members and answer questions that perhaps come up because it wasn't quite as clear as it might have been in a report, or because, you know, witnesses come to the board meeting and they want to discuss things. So the investigators are there to dialogue with the board members and answer questions if they arise. So I think that works pretty well.
Yeah. And it seems like the biggest exposure or activity level, I guess not exposure, is the amount of complaints per registrant. You know, that obviously we're higher, but there's reasons for that. It, you know, it's just the nature of our profession, really. There was a compelling reason, you know, to that might be it because of our percentage of complaints, I suppose. But.
Is it a staff function, and does it function well that if you had a particularly difficult case or problematic that you would have somebody from the EAC committee that was on that? They do come show up, and
yes,
because we just had a real tough one, right?
Yep.
And somebody was there.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's rare. That's super rare that we'd have one that's like you'd probably want to have somebody there.
Right.
As long as and staff does that.
Yes.
Staff?
We'll reach out if we know there's going to be concern or questions, or if we need an expert to be available to comment, then. Yeah.
I think that's
good. Keith have any input?
I don't think so. That'll be... Keith, just to clarify, you wanted to speak to 5D, right?
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Also, if there is a hearing, if the board really has to make a formal decision about a case, they will have a home inspector as the expert.
Okay.
And I've done that several times over the years.
You mean administrative law just?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've gone in... as a witness.
Okay. Perfect.
And I also go in to defend our decisions.
Because you're not quiet about No. Very good. Awesome. Any other discussion?
No, I mean, maybe there needs to be a compelling reason for us to pursue this, and maybe we're not finding it right now.
Not yet. Okay. I think it's functioned very well.
Okay.
We're like 15 years in now.
Who was the gentleman that brought this up?
15 years in.
You remember?
His name is John Nelson.
He should have been here today to defend that, because I'm in agreement with everyone here. The system is working.
Yeah, it ain't broke.
No.
Yeah.
No.
And he does take part. He's an EAC member.
And I'm afraid of that homework.
Yeah.
Okay. Then let's move along to agenda item 5B, which is, should home inspection be designated as an occupation or as a profession? So where did... I'm not sure where this came
from the same place.
Okay. Oh, that's right. Okay, so I don't know how that got assigned in the beginning. Like, we're certified versus registered. Is that correct?
Right. That's how it's written in the statute.
That's statute?
I believe so. It's called certification. So that's where we inherited it. So there was, you know...
I ran all that, and I don't know why that occurred. Well, maybe the agency asked for it or something.
Are all the occupations on the board have a representation on the board? All the professions, rather, have a representation on the board? They do,
yes,
right?
Yes,
and the occupations do not.
Correct.
So
it's a definition.
So are alarm people called certified?
Yes.
Okay. So you're either certified or you're registered here. Okay.
Yep.
And the differences are...
Now, certified or licensed, I believe, right?
They're all licensed. Everyone's licensed.
The professions call themselves registrants.
No, okay.
We inherited that, too.
We call ourselves registrants, too.
You do.
Yeah.
But that could be because you're part of us, and we refer to everybody as registrants.
Mm-hmm.
But they do refer to themselves as professions and not as occupations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the way it was in the statutes. from when the agency started in 1921, so.
Yeah, and that must have came about gathering input from all stakeholders, which is what we did when we ran the original statute, and that might have been a request to the board.
I don't know how it's characterized in other states, do you?
I don't hear of too much for occupation in other states from what I've seen from other legislative activity going around, and I've seen some of that activity. So we're referred to as occupation on the website,
mm-hmm.
and then within the rules, Pat, not with the rules, the statute
refers,
right,
gives us a certification instead of a license,
right,
which is, but, I mean, it's the same thing,
but
so.
Everything in the rules refers to the profession as I see it. When I was looking through the rules package and the changes, everything is a profession there. We've always thought of ourselves as a profession.
Well, we have professional standards.
We have professional standards, and I
don't know that.
I mean, does it make a difference?
Any impact?
How we refer to them?
Legally, I don't think it makes any difference.
Either.
I mean, the State Board of Accountancy, for example, that regulates certified public accountancy, individual CPAs are certified and firms are registered. So I think the term is really just used to differentiate between different regulated bodies. I don't think there's a difference, a hierarchical difference between them. They're just relatively synonymous terms for all purposes.
Right.
So do you see I don't see a legal problem with like calling them a profession on our website, do you?
No, I don't think there's any, I don't see where the difference between the term registered and the term certified would create a preference for professional one way or another.
Because they both imply that there are requirements to obtain licensure, and that's ultimately what all the groups have, so they have a license to practice.
We regulate professions.
Right.
So.
It's a good first step in the event that we ever have to get on the board. You know, for reasons unforeseen.
If that is, in fact, a defining consideration for board entry.
Right.
but it's simply nomenclature other than that, though, right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if we're ever at the legislature again, we're not going there for that matter.
No, thank you.
I can assure you we're not spending money for that. But
I don't see why we couldn't bring this issue to the board and just ask them if they're cool with us changing how we refer to you on our website. Because obviously a statute change would be required to change the word certificate to license, but you know, I don't see why we couldn't.
Yeah, I'm not creating a trained home inspector.
Right, thank God. Right.
Yeah, it should just be a matter of their own.
Right. So,
do you want to request that?
I think I will through a motion. I'd like to make the motion that we do pursue requesting that home inspectors be represented as profession versus occupation to the board
in all public or whatever,
and which would include website updating. That's needed in the motion.
Yep. I'll second that.
Okay.
Okay. We have that worded well enough? That captured.
I don't know if there's any other...
rely on the recording of that.
Yeah, and on the
discussion
part, I don't know if there's any other considerations for a possible name change that we're not thinking about, other than the website face of the BTR and any other internal... considerations that we're not thinking through right now.
Well, this actually, if you look at the proposed Senate bill,
yep.
On the first page, you'll see section one talks about a heading change.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a cleanup that Ledge Council is proposing, changing the title of our board in the statutes from architects, engineers, geologists, home inspectors, landscape architects, and surveyors to architects, engineers, geologists, home inspectors, landscape architects, land surveyors, and the alarm industry. So they're already including you in with all the professions, so I
that's
think
cool.
That's cool, right?
That's substantive right there, it seems. Huh.
Yep.
Okay.
I like that.
Okay. So that's how the board's going to be referred to anyway, not talking about occupations or professions or any of that.
Okay, any other discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the motion or in discussion, say aye.
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 Okay, motion passes. And while this is a season of Thanksgiving, I just want to say on behalf of all of us, we're very, very grateful to be here in this agency. I think
cool.
It's very well run. It's an amazing place
Thank
for
you.
Us. Thank you.
Continues to be.
Yes.
We're very fond of you guys, too.
You're right. Because we're unpredictable and wacky? No. Okay, moving on to agenda item 5C, whether to review EAC recommendations for discipline prior to sending them to the board for action. This comes from the September 2018 meeting.
In October, didn't the board address this? I think they did.
I think they did. And
I thought the minutes said, I don't recall the further action on the in the minutes on this item.
I remember it. The way I remember it, I believe they said that they would send back any
more egregious.
If there's something very egregious, we
right.
would see it, but after the board meeting, not prior to.
Mm.
Forget what the board said.
I'm pretty sure that they, you know, they didn't
did
want to burden us with
it. At the October
I don't
meeting.
Know. Does this come from that particularly problematic recent case?
I believe it did.
So we would, I think it would, if it didn't occur, it didn't occur. I believe it did not. It would have been probably good to get that one to this committee before it goes to the board.
Only thing about that one was there wasn't really a question about the home inspection itself.
Right.
It was an ethical
behavior,
issue
yeah.
that I think everyone understood regardless of whether they were home inspectors.
Didn't need expert
Correct.
Input.
Correct.
We all get that. Okay. That makes
so,
sense.
And that case resolved with a consent agreement.
And what they determined was that this would put a wrench in the gears, actually, if it had to come to us before mm-hmm. it went to the board.
Right. We don't want to do that on
We would hold it up at least a month and possibly more.
It could also cost the respondent money and allege your time if they have to go do more stuff.
Right. And you can't address the problem
so
in a timely manner.
What we had discussed was a report to you about how the board votes on recommendations on home inspector cases. And we can certainly do that, you know, mm-hmm. every month, just provide it. You know, there were 10 cases that went to the board in the past 2 months involving home inspectors. The board accepted all 10 recommendations, or the board accepted mm-hmm. 8 and then modified penalties or whatever.
I think that's very
you
valuable.
You
want
to do that?
Maybe
okay.
we start with that.
In addition to all the numbers you provide.
Now, I'd like to keep a window open where we can actually request something. For instance, if it goes into an EAC committee meeting and it's grievous, very bad,
yeah.
that maybe it should be recommended that it come to this committee before it actually gets sent off to the board.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And maybe if the EAC committee members can actually request that, maybe we can accommodate that.
So that could be an option for the EAC committee, is to push it back to get our input?
Push it back to us after they've done their decision, but only in the
only
very
if
bad
they're if
case,
they're stuck man. On something
if
serious,
stuck, yeah,
right.
That would be something the investigators or the person running the EAC would have to know as a possibility.
Yeah, if the committee could recommend to the chairman, who's an investigator, that that the rules and standards take a look at this.
Okay.
Then we, I would.
Has that ever happened in your experience with home inspector EACs, that the gentlemen or ladies on the committee can't make a decision or feel like they need some more expert?
Not too often.
Not that I can recall.
Yeah, I don't recall it happening.
Maybe a faster option, if that comes up, recommend having one of you at the board meeting.
That would be even be better.
And
yeah,
that way, it wouldn't
thought.
Go, and you wouldn't have to meet more often, and it wouldn't create a delay.
I like that.
Okay.
Yeah, good thought.
Home inspectors are used to making decisions.
That's right.
kicking the can down the road.
That's why so many of them sit in front of the EAC.
It's the nature of our profession.
Okay, so I don't think this requires a motion of any kind.
I think not.
Is there any other discussion on this item? Okay, so these should all, the first three should be, no, we made a motion on B.
Yeah, we motioned on 5B.
Okay. Get my notes in order here. All right. So moving on to agenda item 5D is continued review of parallel inspector rule requirements and list of providers. This is, again, a carryover from the September 2018 meeting. If we could just get an update on board action and that type of thing, or any progress since the September meeting.
This case, Mr. Smith's request to modify the rule that went into effect in August went before the board last month, and Mr. Leeds was there, and there was a healthy discussion at the board meeting, and the board determined to deny Mr. Smith's request and elaborated with eight reasons that were that are included in your packet and which were read aloud at the meeting, and then sent Mr. Smith a letter explaining why they denied his request and including those eight reasons. And Mr. Leeds was there. I don't know if you want to elaborate any further, but I think the sense was, let's see what happens with the rule. Let's not make changes this soon. And the board, I think, was pleased to hear that the associations are going to try to provide a list to help potential home inspectors, candidates who want to do parallel inspections. And, you know, they affirmed that the board went through all the required steps to notice the public about the changes and, you know, publish the rule and the proposed new rule appropriately. So,
good.
Yeah. Did you want to add anything? No? Okay. Peter?
Mr. Smith came up with very good reasons why his inspectors, or why he's adverse to the rule, okay? And it's generally about a couple of his inspectors, two or three of his inspectors. I just said that the rule is a statewide rule, okay? And that we have over half the inspectors in the state meet the requirement, okay? And the of the 5 years and the 250 parallel, 250 inspection, paid inspections. And the board just agreed with me that it was not overwhelming and was not a detriment to the general public. It was actually to protect the general public.
Yeah, and I think that's a distinction that we really had to make clear, that the way the rule is worded, it's to protect the public and help the applicants make sure they're qualified to conduct home inspections pursuant to the standards.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I think it was noted that it was the new law that came into effect said people could challenge a rule if they felt it was burdensome to licensing. and the board determined that the new rule was not burdensome to licensing, it may place a burden on Mr. Smith's business and his business practice, but for public safety, they affirmed that the rule they felt at least should stay in place to see how it affects qualifications and the number of complaints, you know, the intent that you guys considered when you drafted the rule. So.
Right. Yeah, and I see in here that the document indicates that we make up a very large percentage of the complaints here, and we're not a very large segment of the population here. Peter and I were involved in kind of the writing the original set of rules and the founding father type activities, and we always knew it was problematic that we did not have a requirement because we were told we couldn't. They didn't want to keep track of two different levels of, you know, a super inspector that's allowed to do parallels and a normally licensed. So we always lived with the risk that folks would get their license and very soon thereafter be training other inspectors without any real experience out there that would be, you know, actually considered reasonable. So, and I had heard multiple reports that that was actually going on. So we had to pick some date, and it seems reasonable to me. And beyond that, I think we're taking steps to ferret out who is out there that's willing and make it easy to have a list of folks so that it's not a burden to those wanting to enter the profession. That's what I'm worried about, too. I want to balance the, you know, trouble of getting into the profession or the difficulties versus protecting the public. And I think we do need to work on these percentage of complaints, and you do that through better
education
and parallel training, mm-hmm. field experience. So.
Mm-hmm. And the BTR is assembling a list of parallel, is that right?
I have a list, correct.
Right, okay, so that's in the beginning stages of having that on the website?
We haven't discussed where
I saw an email soliciting right. that of the inspectors, mm-hmm. and to have a section on our BTR site for the public and for those new registrants wanting to come into the profession. I thought there was going to be a repository for...
The chances are that the chapter, Arizona ASHI, will maintain the list, mm-hmm. and then... but Robert fortunately took the first step.
Okay, to solicit. Out,
and then we'll get that list. Okay. I actually, at the last AZ ASHI meeting, asked folks in the crowd, I have a list, and then the chapter will be sending out a mailing, so we're going to try and get the biggest reach to all parts of the state that we can.
Okay, so the chapter will maintain that, not on the BTR
side. I believe that.
I'm just compiling as
I see.
A favor. And
okay.
Also, my solicitation said that I'd be able to give it to people upon request or to schools upon request, so nothing about post it on the website because I'm not sure.
Okay. Really okay. I wasn't sure what the intent was on that, but thank you for assisting with that, because it does help, you know, all folks trying to come into the profession here. That the longer list we have for those willing to do parallels
in all parts of the state.
Yeah.
Yep. So we're working on that. I'm working with the chapter president to get the. We're probably going to do a snail mail and email blitz to get more people out there on the list. And just for the record, we do provide parallels, have from the beginning, because I was told if we don't and we all close ranks, they'll strip it out of the bill, the statute. So we've been providing parallels since 2003, and I was adversely affected. One of our inspectors was out. He's out. So I was affected by this, but it is what it is. I would rather do that I care about the profession.
Just for the record, too, I mean, I'd like to say that the board takes seriously, as does this committee, as part of the board, the notice requirements that we have to comply with to provide due process to all our stakeholders, the public, the applicants, the registrants, this committee's meetings are always agendized. We put out what we can on the website, as much information as we can. We email our stakeholders. I think it's really important, and I know ASHI does the same and several of the other associations as well, that the public, Mr. Smith and all the interested home inspectors, stakeholders, whomever, come and attend our meetings and hear the work that goes on here, hear and understand how hard you guys work on all the issues that constantly come up, and they change and differ from each meeting. But I think it's important to note that for this particular rule change, how long you guys worked on it, and how carefully you considered the issue, and, you know, wordsmithing, and, you know, we're always open to hearing other people's opinions, and Mr. Smith's opinion, and all the other stakeholders in the process. That's how I think we make things better. So I'm glad to see that you're here. I hope that you continue to come and express your perspective, because, again, that's how we do what's best for this particular profession.
Yeah, I guess the other thing, too, is it's just hard to strike that balance that makes everyone happy.
Right.
Really, I think 84 hours to get in this profession is completely insane, but I don't get my way. I think 30 parallels is crazy, but
crazy
it is what
low.
It is.
Crazy low, you mean.
Crazy low. And that 5 years is absolutely not unreasonable.
Compared
and 250 is low either.
Compared to what the other professions
right.
are required to
or
do.
Or even appraisal. You know, it's like 2,000 hours of experience.
Yeah. Or even the realtors. It's a very low bar.
Yeah.
It's a very low bar. This is why I suspect that the board is going to tell us to stay as occupation.
No, you're going to be there to advocate for us.
All right, remember?
Remember the... And with that said, Mr. Smith, do you have anything to add at this point?
Yeah, I would like to just add a comment. I understand the idea of changing this to the 5-year, 250 inspections was to protect the public. However, without additional training or certification for the parallel inspector, I don't see how you've made any change, because what guarantees that a guy that has 5 years, what guarantees he's going to be a good instructor?
Would you not agree that he's got a great chance of being at 5 years and 250 minimum, which is some bar we have to set? Wouldn't you agree that the shot is way better? That
you're still shooting in the dark, unless you qualify that instructor or inspector, you have no idea what capability he has. I mean, you don't know if he's, not everybody's a good instructor. If you want to protect the public, you know, this branch here, you could be making more money by certifying inspectors to do parallels. What a great way to raise money.
The goal is not to raise, this agency doesn't exist to raise money, though.
Well, that's not all right. That's just a side point. But the biggest thing here, if you want to protect the public, you don't just make an arbitrary decision or a rule for 5 years, 250. You train those people. All of my guys are instructors, certified by the state post-secondary department.
So by your way of thinking, Mr. Smith, everyone should be coming to your school.
No.
Well, the truth of the matter is the gentleman also has to be 3 years without any complaints against him, you know, clean with the board. 250 inspections teaches the gentleman a lot. He has to review the report until it meets the standard, and when it comes to the application process, if it doesn't meet the standards, that parallel inspector is going to be on the line just as much as the applicant will be on the line. This is a way that we can actually be sure that those 30 parallel inspections are all meeting the standard. Right now, we're pretty much convinced that the last one that shows up to us is the one they think meets the standard, and most of them get kicked back. So we're concerned with the other 29. All 30 are supposed to meet the standard. And the only way that we can actually control this is by putting putting requirements on the person who's training. And we don't want to have to send them all to your school or maybe two or three schools like yours in the entire state. That would be self-defeating. What we want to do is we want to get home inspectors that know that they can meet these standards actually do home inspections. And it will work, I'm convinced.
You've always had that restriction in there.
We've never had that restriction in there. And on the other hand, I just reviewed a report that I sent back where the gentleman's number was 65, okay?
Impossible.
It's impossible for this guy to actually do home, to know what's required, okay, without the experience. And we're very satisfied with the rule.
Okay, that's fine.
Keith, what suggestions would you have for qualifications of a training inspector if
what I would do is, and this, the BTR could set up the program, just have the guys come in, talk about your BTR checklist, what's required to be on there, talk about ASHI standards, make sure everybody's in compliance, and then make sure that the report is complying with all this. I think it's that easy. I don't think it would take that much time, but you get qualified people up.
So that the BTR's the school, kind of, is your view?
If you want to do that, or, I mean, I'd be willing to set something up, too, so whatever.
Okay. Do we have any kind of guidance for a training inspector?
Yeah, we do.
What level of guidance do we have?
We give them the standards. We give them the report checklist supplement, okay?
Right.
And we make them go to school. All right, and in the schools, I'm sure they're all teaching report writing.
Right, but no specific, you know, guidelines, or if you're going to be doing parallels, you better make sure you're doing ABCD for the training inspector, for the mentor.
Well, when the report comes back, if it doesn't meet ABCD, we know they did.
Right, yeah. Right. I just didn't know if we were proactively providing anything.
How could we do
that? I guess we wouldn't, yeah.
Okay. We struggle for volunteers as it is, and the board is overwhelmed with other professions. How can we possibly do that? We actually put together, David will remember, 10 years ago, an entire class for this. Okay, it's still on my computer. All right? We never got that class off the ground simply because
people don't show up.
People don't show up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The board doesn't
create standards. The board doesn't create schools. The board is a governing agency, okay? We adopt standards and we try to get other people in the industry to teach. And don't forget the three-legged stool that we're standing on. Parallel inspections is experience. The other leg of the stool is your education. You're offering both, but the parallel inspection is experience. And we're not really too concerned with the educational part during the parallels. We're concerned with the experience. During the educational part should be coming out of the 84 hours.
That's half of it, absolutely.
Okay. All right, I think this is fully discussed.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. We appreciate your input, Mr. Smith.
Okay.
And moving on to agenda item 5E, this is an update regarding concerns that home builder requirements are preventing home inspectors from inspecting newly built homes. This is, again, a carryover from the September 18 meeting.
So, I have good news.
We opened up a channel with the ROC.
Yes, we have. And after your last meeting, I reached out to the registrar's office and requested a meeting.
No kidding.
And they said we have to wait till after the election, obviously.
Right.
But we have a meeting scheduled for Monday, the 19th.
Wow.
Yeah, this coming next Monday.
Great.
So Patty and I are going to go over. Hopefully Doug will come as well. I don't know.
That's our executive director?
Yeah. Mr. Fleetum. Do any of you want to come? I mean, I don't know if you're available or if you're interested, but I think it would...
Do you know what time?
I do. You know, I left my cell phone. Let me go get it. It's in the morning.
Okay. Monday morning.
You should go, Paul.
That's great. We got a meeting. If I've got a hole in the calendar, I think I'm going to try to make it.
You have to go.
Create a hole.
create a hole.
I know it's tough. Things are real slow, but create a hole.
Yeah, I wish I had a little more notice on it.
Time, right? So that's right down the road. So it's like coming down here.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm wrong. I apologize. It's at 2:30.
2:30?
Yes.
Still on the 19th?
On the 19th, and it's at their office, which is 1700 West Washington, Governor's Tower.
It's the Governor's Tower?
It is, yes.
I thought they were down the road there.
They used to be, but they moved several years ago into the Governor's Tower.
Okay. So is it a floor, an entire?
It is, and I
just couldn't look at the.
Yeah, I don't have the floor there. I want to say it's like the second floor.
Okay.
But if
the guard will know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you know. So I don't know. I just thought to throw it out. You guys don't have to come. We can certainly report back. But, you know, I think it might be compelling for
Paul would be the premier guy.
Yeah. So I've got one scheduled. I will, after the meeting, I'll get the logistics
okay.
from you. I'm going to try to move my afternoon on Monday
You've
to another time.
You've got some of that, too, from the new building.
So that I can be there.
Yeah, he's a better man for it.
He's the best.
He's got more of a concern about it. I just sneak in.
Did you speak with the ROC director? Did they have any questions? Did they understand the posture of the concern?
No.
No, not at all.
No. I didn't get a comment back.
Okay.
I did email and say, here's our concern we'd like to talk to you about.
Okay.
Home builders excluding or making the home inspector jobs more difficult, especially with roofs.
Okay.
But he didn't respond. His secretary responded.
Okay.
So it'll be new and fresh to him, I'm sure.
You need to be there because it's a lot more than just about roofs. It's about
well, it
insurance.
Is. And
right,
the contents
so.
Of the white paper, I don't know if it makes sense to share any of that or not, or if that might be a
you
little.
You might want to read it over again. I mean, just to make it as perfect as it can be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So maybe let's talk after this
sure.
meeting, and I'm going to try
You're
my
sick.
Very best.
Calling
to
sick.
Calling sick, right. Yeah, we do that all the time.
Or if you just want to give me the white paper and let us advocate, whatever works for you. But I was excited to hear back from them because,
awesome.
Yeah, initially they put me off because of the election, but then they did reach out and say.
So the BTR board was supportive. I don't know if this
yeah.
was something you worked
oh, yeah.
through the BTR, but they were supportive
yeah,
of
Yeah, I think,
us
you know, for
that.
Public protection and to make sure that our inspectors are being able to do their jobs, because if you're not and we get complaints, what are we going to do?
Right.
You know?
I think the goal, the end game here is to see if we can work with the ROC to set a reasonable set of requirements that, you know, are somewhat reasonable. You know, basic insurance, basic access.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that
keeping in mind that they own the property and
right.
I mean,
but we have all that. Every property we go on is owned by someone.
I get it, but things like whether they want to accept the risks involved with opening electrical panels or
well, that would
getting
be our
on
risk.
Roofs. Yeah, but if you know attorneys well, no negative. Everybody's named, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So that means we're defending or they're defending themselves. And
mm-hmm.
and the disaster of lawsuits is not some final judgment, it's the mm-hmm. the cost of
right,
defense.
I understand it. I would stay away from that subject as long as you can.
But I don't know if you're going to go there. I don't know how much detail we should discuss. It's just very short notice, so
right,
we're rarely together if you would allow us some flexibility to discuss the goal here. You have the goal laid up. You're definitely sick Monday afternoon. I can see that you're getting peaked and just.
We accept their qualifications, the ROC's qualifications as builders. So when we actually recommend licensed builders and licensed tradesmen to make the repairs that we pinpoint, okay? They need to accept our qualifications as home inspectors. They need to understand that we already have our insurances in line, we already have our qualifications in line, we already know the risks involved. So if we're going to accept that they have their insurances in line and their qualifications in line, we are another profession who needs to also be respected in the same way. And we don't throw more qualifications on them, and they should not throw more qualifications on us.
Well, wait a sec, because I just opened like a big, endless conversation here, mm-hmm. and I think it's a bad idea.
Okay.
I think what we should do is have a kickoff meeting with the ROC, then we should go have a chat somewhere, you know, or something.
Well, we don't want to violate
not all three.
Meeting law.
yeah.
Well, are
two
the
can.
Three of us allowed, the three of
on
us
a whole
can
other
can't do anything.
Nope.
We can have another meeting to talk yeah. about this.
We can set up a meeting right after that.
How's your time
right
today? Anybody got to go?
You gotta post it.
Okay, let's just control what we talk about, because this can go on forever.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
I don't want to
let's confine it a little bit.
So one thing, though, if you put yourself in their camp, they encounter home inspectors that don't know what they're talking about.
Right.
And I'm sure that's very, very annoying right. in their world, because we just get in the way of everything.
Absolutely.
And so, but we can't probably fix that. So if that comes up, you know, that's got to be a talking point,
mm-hmm.
because I know that's a concern of theirs. But what I don't understand, and maybe the legal folks in the room could help with, is they actually put things in their contract that are like, they expect to be named as additional insured on our auto insurance. And we're driving on a public street. We don't like enter properties with vehicles. So it's not on their property. That seems like, I want that out. It should be banned on every contract that they try and impose on us, that we have to name them on a minimum $300,000 policy. That's just absurd. That's just to try and keep us out, in my opinion. And then they will do things like require a minimum of $1 million or $2 million in E&O when this agency requires like $100,000,
$100,000, $200,000. I saw one that required $3
million. Oh, God.
Yeah.
And I don't even know that $3 million is available.
I don't think it is.
I don't even think we could buy it.
Yeah.
So we have gone through a historic experience, too, where one builder in particular produced a report that none of us would sign. It was just known that no buyer of a new home was going to get an inspector out there, a private inspector, to advocate for them, because it was so prohibitive. And then, fortunately, the downturn wiped them out. It was really a blessing there. But now we're rotating back into that, these onerous contracts that we're struggling to even sign.
And I don't know if there is, in fact, a way for the ROC to rein in the GCs.
Yeah.
I don't know. They can, you know, generate an edict, but I don't know that as their licensees, how much leverage the ROC director actually has. That they could,
right.
they could, maybe they have their own substantive policy statement where they could put out and put out to all the builders saying, hey, home inspectors have certain rights and privileges, and you can't just stomp on those, and here's why you should, you know, maybe accept a basic set of requirements and not be onerous.
Well, I think that will be something we have to hear from him.
Right.
You know, especially because we don't know how he operates and whether he meets with builders regularly or what. I mean, they don't have open meetings at the registrar.
Right.
You know, he just makes decisions on licensure and on enforcement actions.
Wow.
And I know, I mean, I was there 2 decades ago as legal counsel, and he used to have advisory committee meetings, like the plumbers would come in once a year and talk about plumbing code and stuff like that. So I don't know if they're currently doing that still, or if they've evolved and have you know, more hands-on meetings with
industry.
We'll
try to find out at a minimum if what they have for advisory committees is just one component.
If we do go there, we need them to understand also that we're not code inspectors. The city does that code inspection.
Yeah.
All right? Structure, function, and safety. They need to understand that that is our purview. And because I've seen limitations saying that if you call anything out in our structure, function, safety issue, we need to refer to a code.
Yeah.
All right?
Oh, that's been a requirement.
That's another contract couple builders. You must cite the code on everything you write.
But we're not code inspectors, even though we know the codes as we get older. But the new inspectors are not going to know.
Right. The other more minor consideration, I suppose, is that RSC has the minimum workmanship standards for licensed contractors.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no one really inspecting to those standards.
Right.
You and I might do some of that. I do a fair amount of it.
I carry it with me.
And, you know, how bowed a wall is, framing, drywall. There's a ton of standards out there that if you talk with an ROC investigator, they say there's actually 2 years on the cosmetics, which no builder will own up to. So, and there's a number of builders that put out their warranty documentation and tell the buyers that you've got 1 year warranty on these things, and if you don't tell us by 1 year, then too bad. ROC says 2 years on everything. So there's no one providing an inspection to these standards, and the hope is that the ROC may look at us and say, well, gee, these guys, some of these guys are actually utilizing the standards that we're propagating, and no one else is inspecting unless it's an investigator from the ROC. That's the only person who holds the contractor to that bar. Well, we're another arm that can provide inspections on the minimum workmanship standards. We are currently doing it. So that may be another reason to get a foot in the door there.
There's also another. Not all the builders are bad guys. I've had builders hire me to do their entire developments, three inspections on each house, and actually walk their people through.
Cool.
Okay? So not all the builders are bad guys. They really want to do a good job. So I think there might be open to the fact that that we're not bad guys either.
Yeah. And what we're fighting here is the builders' attorneys, frankly.
Yeah.
Is our biggest concern their contracts and their behavior to keep us out?
Really?
I think it really is.
So I don't know that a regulating agency has any, I mean, that doesn't that take like a civil lawsuit to change or a statute change? Like, what if somebody didn't like our contract and they came to you?
It's more of a civil lawsuit issue, wouldn't you think?
Right, something like that is going to be very difficult for a regulating body to control contracts that are made by registrants.
My fear.
Yeah.
What are we looking for as an outcome? My outcome is simply that maybe they send a notice to their builders saying, hey, home inspectors are allowed on your job. Stop making it tough on them. You know? I mean, even if they just say, this is where we stand. We want the home inspectors and the builders to get along. Because use other words.
And to have some maybe suggested limitations or parameters for that inspector when they're on site.
Right.
I think that's what our end game is here.
You know, out in California, when inspectors showed up when I was building, the city inspectors, we had to actually put ladders up for them. Okay?
Oh, yeah.
We had to accommodate the inspectors. We need to get these people to understand. We're just in there to be sure things are okay, safe, functional.
We give them feedback on the performance of their subs.
We give them a punch list.
Subcontractors, yeah.
Yeah, it's just a very good system for them. That's why they would hire them.
Yeah, and a lot of supers are frankly very professional and welcome us in because they know they got 40 homes that they're supervising and they don't have the time to do the level of quality control. So they love our punch list.
It's so easy to work off a list as a builder.
Yeah.
If he goes in there and tries to create a list, it's going to take his whole day. But if we give him a list, he's in there and out of there in 2 hours.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's go in being open to a healthy discussion about this and see what he'd be willing to do. I hope that he'll be open to the discussion and be helpful. But we'll see. And, you know, we can always bring this issue to the governor's office, too.
Right. And
because we're two agencies. I mean, if you feel that it's a significant burden, mm-hmm. we can request a meeting, including the governor's office.
And I think maybe there's a shot across the bow in this meeting to let them know that we just as soon handle it at this level.
Right.
And not get your father involved, kind of thing. And because, you know, we could find, you know, someone who has been harmed mm-hmm. if we chose to and work it from a legislative standpoint, and we'd prefer not to do that. So can you help us do it this way?
Formally. Now, have you guys all experienced this?
Mm-hmm.
Keith, have you as well, if you go inspecting new home builders' properties?
Yeah, but typically it's the insurance requirement.
And the insurance
requirement.
We can
always get that, but they don't want you up on the roof. I understand.
They won't let you on the roof, open the electrical panel, attic. So it's like they handicap us pretty severely.
Yeah, and they're all over the place.
Right.
There's no commonality with it. And again, in the white paper, I detailed some of the more restrictive policies of some of these builders, up to the point where they just won't let us on site.
Can you get me a copy of your white paper?
I can. I guess I didn't send it to you. I will do that.
Cool.
Can I add a point of consideration? That there may be a downside if you hold the ROC or the general contractor, the builder, responsible. Because right now I don't think we get violations from them. If we start reporting on stuff and if it's wrong, then maybe they could do a violation and might increase violations to our inspector.
Like a complaint against the home inspector for walking outside the line.
Something to consider.
You know, oddly, so I guess what we're talking about mostly is a pre-drywall inspection. Is that correct?
No, frames and finals.
Finals,
I think mostly,
well.
Yeah. But
so
I
it's not a home inspection. It's not really the purview of this agency. That's the way it's been until it's a final inspection. The home's
right.
complete.
Okay.
Because we can't even do our, you know, we're not really doing a whole... a home inspection until that final. But I don't know. I guess they could reverse the deal. And
I think so. I'm not sure, Keith, how much risk there really is from that if we try to go at it, you know, relatively soft and try to
right.
be reasonable and reasonable parameters. I don't know that we'll be any more in the epicenter of the
earthquakes
as we are
now. I don't
now.
See it as any added risk. We have that risk on all the properties
right.
we go
yeah,
on. So
right.
I don't see it as an added risk.
Well,
right.
you know how they can get
they can get
about that stuff and
yeah.
retaliate.
They can
and
retaliate.
And you know, we do have to depend on the home inspector. You know, if you go up on the roof on a shake type concrete tile that was put up yesterday and came out of the kiln just 2 days ago, you better not be walking out.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
oh, of course.
There's,
yeah.
You know, we have to use our own common sense.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I know we want to move this along here.
You did.
And well,
you're fine.
Okay. Glad you like it.
The other factor is, I remember in the very earliest days of crafting the statute, one of the stakeholders was the Arizona Home Builders Association or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if there's an interplay there.
One other thing we were chatting about is maybe the idea of talking with Scott's colleague who advises ROC.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's another approach
working on,
because...
Working between the lines over there.
Yeah. The
a lobbyist?
No, the AG.
No.
No lobby. No, the AG. And it could be that he can facilitate a discussion as well, assuming,
that's a good
you
thought.
Know, it yep. could be a second step from our meeting with... the registrar, and then maybe we can include John.
Great idea.
Yeah, and the other component is this white paper has been forwarded to Nicole Slavik of the
Realtors.
Of AAR, and she was kind of waiting until the dust settled on all the elections, but I have held off from reaching out to her just to see kind of what the posture is, but when it comes time to circle the wagons, I think we could have the support of the Realtors.
Okay.
And I think we go in to the meeting on Monday saying that there is interest, at least on the realtor side, to support this effort on behalf of the realtors, home buyers.
Good.
And so we've got some components with some weight here, and I think we want to try to keep the momentum moving. But I agree with David. Let's have this be a little more of an exploratory meeting, see what we might be able to accomplish, and see if we can take it from there.
Yeah, go in being friendly and then, you know, open-minded.
Yeah.
Can't believe I'm saying that, but...
it's a new day.
If you came out with the ROC just recommending to their new home builders that they don't do that, I would be satisfied. Just even because I don't see that that body's going to be able to change this. I think you're right about having to go to civil court to, you know, on any specific case to get a specific builder to get slapped on the hand. But on the other hand, if they said that, yes, as the ROC, we will recommend that they don't try to restrict you with these insurance things and different things, I would be satisfied with that.
Yeah. Okay. And then whatever can be done meeting with the Attorney General's rep, too, that'd be great.
Okay. Sounds like a plan.
And then we'll be keeping that on the agenda?
Yeah, keep it for next meeting, please.
All right, well, thank you for that.
Pretty exciting stuff.
That is. Thank you for arranging that meeting. We really appreciate you doing that. Moving on to agenda item 5F, review of substantive policy statement 8, which is in consideration of its possibility of its removal. And just as a heads up, I did not get it on this meeting. I should have made this a more general item, because I think we'll be able to also remove 6, and if it requires that being on the next agenda, that's fine. It's not urgent or anything. But I think because of the rules change, the intention was to be able to remove 8, and I believe we'll be able to remove 6 as well. So if we don't get the leeway to remove 6 today, which I'm fine with, we'll just hold that for the next meeting. Because 8 is now in rule.
David, could you tell me, please, again, which one 8 is?
It will be in your tab.
Hit 5F on the left-hand side.
Yeah, 5F.
Here. Don't mind my reach.
Yep. So it's about the real, no real estate.
Thank you.
It's the payer received directly or indirectly.
Yeah.
Okay. It's the referral fee?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Okay. Got it.
And then 6 was actually a function of the bond and its application before licensing even began. So it was a very early.
That wasn't the one with the letter of credit issue, right?
No,
that got removed
like
previously.
Let's see.
Okay.
I'll have to look back.
Yes, sorry.
Was it the third,
we'll mess with that
the third
next
option you were talking about? No, I don't know yet.
Well, let's just do that at the next meeting.
Okay.
So,
so we're going to move F to the next meeting.
No, we're going to do F today, and I'm going to put number 6 on next meeting.
So you want to recommend to the board that they
remove.
Okay.
Yeah, this meeting I'd like to recommend that we remove policy statement number 8. And since we haven't really, unless we're allowed, what do you folks think about? Go ahead and look at 6 and add it in.
It's not specifically agendized, but...
No, we're specifically agendized for number 8.
8, but not 6.
Right.
Okay. Better do. I'm fine with that, because that allows us to review it one more time. And
my fear is that we'll be writing another substantive policy statement 5 years from now for the rule.
Which rule? 8?
Yeah.
We have...
Because the substantive policy statements are actually the board's position as their interpretation of the rule, and I don't know if we should keep the substantive policy statement on record just in case someone questions the rule again.
If we keep it, it's got to be reworded because it's referencing, well, maybe it could.
The original substantive policy statement was actually referencing a rule. And the rule, the rule and the standard, not the standard.
Super broad rule.
It was broad. This is good here, but the reason for it was everybody was taking these referral fees and these finder's fees and turning them into all sorts of different programs throughout the real estate industry. And so we had to make a substantive policy statement saying that no matter what we called it, it's against our rules. And I'm afraid that if we pull out the substantive policy statement now, which is pretty good, then we might be finding ourselves asking the board to write to approve another substantive policy statement 5-10 years from now.
Can we look at the rule? Can we pull up the rule real quick, the new rule?
Just so you guys are aware, on your you should have tabs on your PDF.
Yeah.
And there should be statutes and rules already in PDF form. Mm-hmm. If you look at the top of your PDF.
Oh, there it is.
Rules and statutes, just look on the tabs.
What? I don't want
to. Okay, so rules, and you got to go to...
No kidding.
No. Way to go, Kurt. Kurt's our... He takes care of us.
Yep.
Can I search on this?
I got to go back. Oh, no, I don't. Here's the rules. Okay, so which rule are we?
R430, 30, or I'm not sure, but I think it's 301.
301, professional conduct, 301-01.
Come on. 32-301?
R430.
R430.
301.01.
Okay, we're not going to be able to get there.
There is something there, associated policy statement.
So, not in rules here, on the statute, there's rules.
It's already
not 01.
It is 301.01. Can you click on it, Dolly, up there?
This one?
On the second column.
R30.
Second, over, to the right.
Oh.
Yeah, that one right there.
One?
Yep.
Click on the actual title.
Well, it won't
let us. No, it's R430.301.01B, actually.
Yeah, it's 21.
Yeah, you can't click on those. They don't take you there. You got to scroll.
You just have to go down.
You got to scroll. It won't take you there.
Oh, yeah.
I tried that. It's page 21.
Yeah.
Well, it's 21. Oh, okay.
So is that adequate? Just see if it's adequately clear. The hope was to make it.
So there were modifications made from the substantive statement to put into rule.
The original rule just read may not
pay.
It
code.
Was super broad.
Right.
Almost it was too broad, and so we cleared it up by saying
real estate.
The realtor one, and then we went on to say also that
pay to play.
If you look at let's see. Number two, so we did real estate, and you also can't take referral fees for repairs to the property.
Mm-hmm.
Things that are within the scope of the home inspection, you can't like make money by, you know, recommending Uncle Bob.
Right.
So
right.
It's 301. 1, 2, and 3 all refer to what this substantive policy statement.
Three was
right.
always in right. there.
Mm-hmm.
Four was always in there.
Right.
We put one and two.
One and two. Okay.
And in the past we had the super broad one, and all we did is in the substantive policy statement clear up that rule as it relates to the real estate program, or what the realtor vendor program. So what the hope was to clean out the substantive policy statement because we nailed it in this rule.
You did.
So
I withdraw my objection.
Really? It feels like it's...
Yeah.
I thought so, too.
I didn't read it specifically.
And our committee hashed that out to where that was the whole goal, kind of. But, because sometimes you'll have rule and then you add another layer, and if they conflict, I don't know. It just gives folks another area to argue or something. So.
Short of any objection, I'll make a motion that we do recommend to the board that we
eliminate
substantive policy statement number 8, was it?
Yes.
Due to the fact that the rule is all-encompassing.
Okay, and I'll second here.
And then we'll, if we'd like discussion.
Yeah, a little more discussion. So in comparing what we have now in rules to the substantive policy statement, you guys don't feel that there's any further clarification that the statement would provide above rules then, right?
You know, we've got
the important pieces in there.
Do you like what we're doing here?
Legally speaking, what you're doing is perfectly fine. The rule has been updated. A substantive policy statement is just really a clarification of the board's interpretation of the existing rule. So now the rule has been changed to expand and to really
address it,
delineate the specific areas. The clarifying substantive policy statement isn't really applicable in the same way.
Beyond that, does the rule carry more weight than it does carry more weight than the substantive?
Substantive policy statement doesn't really carry any weight. All that is putting the public on notice of how the board is interpreting an existing rule. The statute governs, and then the rule governs in the absence of statute. But beyond that, the policy statement only explains how you're applying an existing rule. So the statement would never overrule the rule.
So I mean, this is important, I believe, because we have many real estate companies that are grossly violating this, that have tons of pay-to-play options that are luring our registrants into these programs. And a lot of these old national companies, the HomeSmarts and some of these others are...
believe it or not, there's some that are like... it's super difficult to tell whether it's a violation, whether it's normal advertising, whether it's things that go on in business like sponsoring events or those types of things.
Yeah, and
so the
more,
I don't know, and it's a very difficult matter to nail perfectly, but I think the more words don't always help us.
No, I know, and I realize, you know, the motion on the table has to do, you know, what this has to do with, but I guess my point during this discussion is that they're pay-to-play programs, and there's a ton of them out there, and our registrants are constantly being bombarded by, well, if you want to get into this office, if you want to put your brochures, if you want to have the opportunity to market to our agents, it's going to cost $5,000 for the year, kind of thing, and some of them actually have contractual, you know, to the point of course, contractual agreements, where you'll get a list of our agents if you pay the fee. It's not really a sponsorship, you know, but they're out there, and as many real estate national real estate companies we have those level of programs.
We don't, and it's not against the law for them to do that. It is against the law for us to participate.
Right. And
unless they open it up to everyone. Okay, this was during our discussion. If that pay-to-play program was opened up to every home inspector in the state and they didn't have a limit on how many they were going to take, say, for instance, they take donations for a Christmas party, if they're asking donations from every home inspector in the state or not restricting it, then we don't see that as an unfair advantage.
I guess I'm not sure. I understand.
I don't know that.
Well, at least that's the way we've always discussed it, whether or not.
I mean, it's still a pay-to-play, even if you offered everybody, right, Peter?
Well, yeah. Good question.
This one's super tough.
That's where we work on complaints. Okay, that's where, you see, we won't be pursuing this unless someone complains
about
something. So we try to give them a heads up, and we tell the home inspector stay away from these programs 100%. But it's the same thing like, say for instance, the Yellow Pages. The Yellow Pages are open for anyone who wants to put an ad in there. That's not a pay-or-play program. Everyone's allowed to, not everyone will.
You know? Right, right.
So what's the difference between pay-to-play or advertising, typical marketing?
So let me give you a crossover is, okay, if you want, and they might have an array of different things that you can do, but we have TVs in every one of the lobbies of our offices. We'll scroll your ad in with a bunch of other ads. I don't think they have to, you better get every inspector and offer it to everyone or else you didn't comply. You know, it's kind of like...
Well, I don't know if it's a matter of offering it to everyone. It's not restricting anyone. This is why we're lucky to be able to deal with on a complaint basis, because it's a very gray area. So.
It's very gray, and I don't know if the Arizona Department of Real Estate has any interest or skin in this game regarding these referral programs and pay-to-play programs. Obviously, they have an ethics department, at a minimum, we should probably clarify, and send something over, wouldn't you think, to the ADRE to say, by the way...
We've done that.
We have done that. Okay.
Several times over the years. We've asked them to stop this several times, and yet they say, no, this is how we do our marketing. It's up to, we can only control home inspectors. It's up to the home inspectors to know enough not to get involved in programs such as this. And if they do, and someone, another home inspector, for instance, feels he's being shysted because of it, he can file a complaint, and then we'll review that on a specific case, because it is so gray.
Can we get some expert opinion, too? Do you have anything on?
Well, it's up to the board specifically to interpret the statutes. As the board's counsel, were someone to refer a case to complaint notice of hearing for a home builder or real estate company selling a list of agents to a home inspector to market to them, that would seem to certainly fall into the realm of a prosecutable offense under the current rules, and I'm not sure I draw a distinction between whether they were doing it to everybody or just doing it to that one person, because it would be case specific. We'd be looking at a specific individual. So if a home inspector were buying a list, that was the only way to get a hold of that list from the national real estate company, that would seem to fall into the pay-to-play.
To buy a list of their agents, maybe?
Yeah, for marketing or something.
That would be a violation, you think?
Well,
if you had to buy it.
It would be up to the board to decide whether that rose to the level of whether they felt that was a violation. If they did and they referred for a complaint notice of hearing, I think it would be prosecutable under that. Mm-hmm. But it would be up to the board to decide whether or not to refer it for prosecution.
I don't think that goes on, because it's like you can go to the...
It's kind of a number.
To the real estate department. I think you can get lists other ways.
Yeah.
Doesn't happen, but it seems like they...
Well, exclusivity. Exclusivity.
Does happen, though. Exclusive access or something, or if they're... Mm-hmm. It's going to depend on the specifics of the case, but the type of situation that Peter was talking about would seem like it could certainly fall under our rules for prosecution. Whether or not it rises to that would be the board interpreting this rule, and that's hence the substantive policy statement based on the earlier rule to kind of define people and let them know what would be likely to fall under that.
Right. Now, regarding a complaint, would an inspector need to be involved, a home inspector need to be involved? It would have to be to a complaint to this board. right? A home inspector would need to be involved within the complaint.
We wouldn't, I mean, the real estate agent themselves could do anything they wanted, and we wouldn't really have any, we don't have jurisdiction over them.
Right, right.
We would, as Peter's pointed out, we would be going after the home inspector. So that's the only thing. It may be something that's fine under the real estate board's rules and statutes for their people to do, but it may be a violation for our guys.
Right, but I couldn't file a complaint against Realty Execs because of their program.
No.
If it was a violation of their board statutes and rules, you could, but it...
You just wouldn't have jurisdiction here. It would be back in their board.
Right, you have to file it with their board.
Right, okay. All right.
This one's really tough because I've seen, you know, I've seen a number of them offered to us, and I've seen some that are really clearly violations, you know, and it's like absolutely not, and you know, all that.
But somebody's buying them. Somebody's taking these.
You see, and that's the problem. The home inspector who doesn't buy them because he knows better is actually handing it to another home inspector who's going to break the rule.
And by following the rules, you're at a competitive disadvantage.
That's why they get so upset, and we need to let the first home inspector know that his recourse is to file a complaint in this board, okay, against the home inspector.
I wonder if we should, like, maybe not take this out just yet, but maybe it could be further refined in light of the new rule, just to give guidance, because this is one of those, this is the premier case for the dilemma of this board operating only on complaints. It's because, you know, the registrants or us, the certified home inspectors need somebody to ask, is this one okay? Is that one okay? And there's nothing there, so people have to run the gauntlet, not knowing what can happen at the end, and that's kind of awful. And this one is just continuous, and I just kept adding words. MSA is in here because I ran across one of those, and it was actually so bad, it was like, no, it's not a violation because you write a check to this other agency, and then the money, you know, so all it did was route money differently, and it's like,
it's been a lot of fun.
Dude, it was, you know, so I obviously, I declined, but I didn't have any other action I could take to shut it down. And there are some clearly bad violations out there, but there's others that are a blend where some appears to me like normal advertising, but I don't know if it's offered to everybody. I don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, you get involved and you don't know if you're doing something bad or not. So with that in mind, would you guys also recommend we try and clear it up and maybe revise the substantive policy statement based on what's going on in the industry?
Personally, I don't.
Because you can't address everyone.
Right.
I don't, and the reason I say I don't is because...
Yeah, we could write about it in the newsletter.
Yeah.
At a minimum, I would like to see something go out to our registrants saying, oh, by the way, it's in rules now, it has teeth, and you better be careful what programs you're accepting that they don't fall into these pay-to-play.
But then they still won't know, because I'm telling you, some of these look like normal advertising.
I know, they look and smell like, I know.
That's why...
We need to give some examples.
And I know Randy wrote about it a couple times, right?
Yeah, all of this has already been done, but we need to do it periodically. I'm in agreement.
Doug, do you have any idea, have you seen this recently? I don't recall, guys, that we've seen this recently.
Well, that ought to wake them up, huh?
That was the last newsletter.
Right.
It basically, if I recall when I wrote this, is I put in your new rule and just making them know that this policy statement existed, but here's the new rule as well.
You're the man.
So, and this was already...
I know he rocks.
Has that gone out?
Yeah.
This went out.
Wow. I don't know where that is.
Man.
I don't
know if it's just the newsletter that we have.
It's on the website. It's on the website, too?
Yep.
Okay.
Summer 2018. I sent out an email with the mass emailing, I would assume.
So I still don't know how to interpret it, though. When you're looking at a program, like, say, it costs money to be shown on their TVs in their offices, or to, people are often asking us to sponsor meetings. That seems like, that just is, goes on in every industry that's marketing to realtors. You want to get a chance to speak there or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, even the sponsorships, you know, could be deemed as a pay-to-play.
Exactly.
You're paying to have access to these 30 agents for 5 minutes.
It could be, but it depends. And that's why it's done on a complaint basis, okay? We set the rule. We try to get the guys to understand that this is quicksand if they're walking on it, and if they fall in, it's because someone else got their nose bent and filed a complaint.
But it's like trade show, or say they put on a mini trade show just for their agency, and you buy a booth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, maybe they're not going to offer it to everyone. They've only got 30 booths. You know, I don't know. There's just normal business practices, and there's things that are clear violations, but everything in between is...
That's why I feel it's a good idea to pull out the substantive policy statement now that you've zeroed in on the rule the best we can, and then just let it see where it goes. All right. I don't think that we're going to be able, this substantive policy statement, if we try to explain all of this, can you imagine?
Yeah,
it would be
so many permutations to it.
We got the rule.
But on the other hand,
people will run the gauntlet. It's just how the system works. It's just
People break the rules all the time.
But you don't know if it's really breaking.
Well,
you know what I mean?
It's quicksand.
You believe it is because you don't have to chase those decisions down. You know what I mean?
Right.
If you're running multi stuff, you're kind of looking at, you know, what are the business practices you're being offered? Do you want to buy a booth at this event? I don't think buying a booth is, you know,
is a violation.
I don't
think so either. Is this a time for us, instead of being reactive on complaints, to be a little more proactive, to say this is what's acceptable, this is what's not? Be clear.
Legally, unfortunately, we can't do that, because the thing is, at the end of the day, I can't tell you what is and isn't against the law here.
Until it gets challenged.
Ultimately, what will happen is, if the board decides there's enough to go on, they'll have me prosecute it, and then either a judge or the board will make that decision. Well, the board will ultimately decide,
okay,
if a judge does. So we really won't know if a booth is acceptable under the rule until there's a prosecution for one and the board makes a final adjudication of the issue. And so there are easy ones on either end of the spectrum. I can tell you, absolutely this is not going to be a violation, absolutely this is a violation, but 99% of all things are going to be in that gray area in between.
Okay.
And we can't...
Yep, there's just no way around it.
And we can't give any perspective idea, because the problem is, I can tell you right now that having a booth is not a violation. Tomorrow the board could decide to prosecute for that, and they could, decide it is.
Mm-hmm.
So.
No way.
And nobody can rely on any, perspective.
Okay. So we can't go there.
Hence the problem we've had for 18 years.
Yes.
So we had to do this, though, because it was getting egregious. I mean, realtors were wanting $1,000 a month, to be part of this program. You're the exclusive home inspector for this agency. And it's like...
But
okay,
it seems to have calmed down since 2015.
Because we fought it and...
Yeah.
You know, it's just...
Because we educated people.
So, it sounds like you guys are talking yourselves out of reversing or removing the substantive policy.
No, not me. Yeah. I'm all for removing.
I'm for removing.
No, I'll stay with my second on the motion and support that. But it is something that maybe it's next year, David. We may need to circle back and take another look at this rule.
Maybe the association should... teacher.
My only fear about, I think it should be revisited all the time, okay? However, we're going to come to the same conclusion next year and the year after that. We did 4 years ago and 5 years ago, that we just don't know until it comes in front of a committee and in front of the board to determine, because it's so gray. Marketing is not against the law, advertising is not against the law, pay to play is, which is which.
Right.
So it's going to be a case-by-case basis.
And frankly, who's going to file a complaint? Who's going to be harmed? Am I going to file a complaint because you got into the HomeSmart program and I didn't, so I got boxed out, and so I would file a complaint?
That would be the way to do it.
Has it ever happened?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it has?
Yeah, not recently, but that's how we've gotten those sorts of complaints.
It's always done by complaint. So if David takes a booth in the home show over here, I'll file the complaint, okay? And then we'll bring it to the board.
But that was well said. The way you explained that was perfect. You nailed it. Okay, so we have a motion.
What we have to do is recommend that the board remove.
We did that. We have that, and it's seconded. And so we did our discussion. Are we ready for a vote? Yes. All those in favor of removal of substantive policy number 8, say aye.
Aye.
Okay, motion passes. Okay, and then the NHIE update, which sounds like Paul's area.
Yeah, I'll keep this brief. I just want to inform this committee just with a quick update on the status of the National Home Inspection Exam. I had completed a 6-year term on the on that exam board of directors and served as president for a couple of years, and was very involved with that board. And so the NHIE is alive and well. The Examination Board of Professional Home Inspectors that produces and maintains the National Home Inspection Exam continues to add additional states that are utilizing the NHIE, and so there is continued momentum with this national exam, including into Canada. So it's the U.S. and Canada. The EBPHIE has recently, as of 2 years ago, gotten into the education business. So, as a nonprofit, so there has been produced a very comprehensive set of technical manuals and administrative guides to assist with the studying and the passing of the NHIE. Prior to this, if you wanted to study for the exam, you got a list of a stack of volumes which included code references, and you had to study all those, supposedly, in order to sit for the exam. So I was heading up that effort and did market research as far as what was out there on passing the NHIE and all those people that guaranteed, well, if you take my class, you will pass it. So we put together with some of the best minds in the profession, including Bruce Barker, who was our technical writer, and put the technical manual together. Not as much how to pass the exam, but there were that's the main components of it. There's some things in the training manual and also how to be a good home inspector. So there was a little artistic latitude given to the technical writer. We're coming up with an updated version of that. Along with the study guide, if you will, the technical manual administrative guide, also called the study guide, there was a PowerPoint presentation put together, 120 hours, to try to meet all the variety of different state legislative requirements. Obviously far exceeds our Arizona requirements. So as a PowerPoint to go along with the manuals for the education providers. And so that is being provided at a very small fee and sometimes for free to the education providers. The home inspection profession has really embraced the education coming from EBPHIE and along both with the study guide and with the PowerPoints. And so that's the education component. The last thing I wanted to mention was that every 5 years, the examination board goes through an RDS, a role delineation study, basically surveying all the inspectors across the state, and in this case in Canada.
Across the country.
Yeah, across the country, excuse me, in Canada, to understand the profession and physically what is being done when the home inspector is out on site. Does it currently match our exam? And so I was also very involved in chairing that RDS, that role delineation study, which happened in 2017. And the results of that was it produced a revised exam template. And that exam template is basically the outline of the contents of the areas, the domains and tasks of the items or the questions on our 200-question exam. And so that update is in the process of working through, and I think by January 1st there will be the new version of the NHIE. So anytime any of our registrants or applicants go to a PSI exam center, they will get the updated version of the NHIE, and then there'll be a follow-on technical manual to reflect those minor changes. As far as the changes in the exam, they weren't really that major. There was looking into the beginnings of things like home automation and certain areas that the exam had not covered in the past but that are coming and down the road. And so there's the beginnings of areas like that. We kept the components that were in place for yard lighting, irrigation, appliances, all those pretty much stayed in place because it was found that home inspectors are still doing these things. There was minor posture changes on the pool and spa. It's still in there, but it's just in a little different area. It's in more of the site conditions than having its own separate one. But it's still, for our Arizona purposes, there's still items in there, questions in there regarding pool and spa. That is really the update on the exam. We continue to be well represented on the exam board and on the exam board committees from Arizona. There's more going on regarding the exam board doing more outreach via newsletter to the states that are utilizing that exam. But the exam board is alive and well and prospering and continuing to look at different options. And there was discussion of having additional certifications that could be offered at some point, maybe master inspector, maybe a separate for pool and spa. Looking at different opportunities there that Arizona home inspectors could, at their whim, take advantage of. So that is the update. I'm happy to help answer any questions that anyone might have.
Very interesting. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good Paul's worked hard on.
Yeah.
In that field.
I think some of the other professions would be envious that home inspectors do this kind of exam study as regularly and that you guys are already giving the exam in a computer-based setting. Those are all issues that the other professions are just considering, especially the geologists.
Right.
The architects have done CBT for a while and they are very involved in, their exam, but the other profession, the engineers too, but
right.
Just more slowly.
Right.
Good to hear.
Yeah, and the other thing that's happening from an exam administrative standpoint is that they're starting to kind of, our exam vendor, the exam vendor for EBPHI, is starting to look at different non-directly proctored exams. So options for like a kiosk in a library in a university or different controlled environments, so you don't have to have a human proctoring. It might be remotely proctored. So they're looking at those options, and so far so good from the exam center regarding the feedback on those exams that had been taken in variety of different occupations and professions. They can tell if there's cheating, they can tell if there was any kind of corruption that might have been done from the remote proctoring. But that is kind of a direction that a lot of these psychometrically valid exams are going. And so I would expect that at some point we may have some options in the state of Arizona to not have to sit physically in a PSI office to take the exam. But they're still working through that, and I'm sure it'll take several years, but that's what's coming.
That's cool. Very cool. Keith, do you take advantage of the study guides and all in your class? You do?
Yeah. I wasn't aware of a PowerPoint.
Yeah, the PowerPoint is there. You can check with the exam board. It's pretty low cost, but if you are a volume purchaser of the study guides, depending on the volume level, they'll throw in the PowerPoint for free. What's that?
Is Norman still on your committee?
Who? Don Norman. Yeah, he's the outgoing president of the exam board.
Yeah, I've been talking.
And we got Charles coming on.
Cool.
Yeah,
thank you
that's
so
great.
Much.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. All right. Item 5H on the agenda. Legislation that has our name
yes,
in it already.
Hot off the press at Ledge Council yesterday. Patty and I looked through it, and, you know, Patty's a Hawkeye on this legislation stuff. So we have recommended one change on page 3 up in the paragraph formerly titled 3 that's got red strike-throughs. We're going to recommend that we keep that paragraph but strike out or foreign country and then at the end or country, because this is the cleanup bill. It's not exactly the new. The new bill is what follows. It's 32126.01 at the bottom of page 3. Registration or certification by endorsement with the requirements and the exceptions. So when you propose new legislation like this, you've got to look at the other statutes that may have an impact or are relevant. So that's where and why two other statutes of the boards, actually three other board statutes are included in this bill, because they're going to be impacted with the new potential language. So the intent was that people from foreign countries need to take the exams.
Speaking of the NHIE, is there a way to, again, this is all about state reciprocity, correct?
Right.
Okay. So is there a way to, when would I not have to take the NHIE if I'm coming in from out of state? What if I have not taken it before, and but I'm licensed in Colorado, let's say, and I would come in here? I'm looking for the wording in here, Melissa, on if there's a requirement to take the NHIE here, or is that not required?
For endorsement, you would have to, that person would have had to been licensed under laws similar to Arizona.
Which would include the exam.
Which would include the national exam.
Okay.
The prior one is the people can qualify for an exemption to exam. I don't know that home inspectors fall into that.
They couldn't.
Okay. Because we would want them to take the exam.
Well, our rule is it has to be taken within 2 years prior.
Which stays in place.
Right, exactly.
To their certification here. So,
well, actually, yeah, how does that fit in? That's a good point, Peter. If they took the exam 3 years ago in Florida, then they would have to retake it if they moved to Arizona because it was 3 years ago? Is that the way this reads?
No, I think they would qualify because they've already taken the exam.
And
they've been practicing in good standing.
Okay.
So as long as
So there's no
Florida,
ambiguity with the two-year rule then, right?
Right,
okay.
Right.
Okay.
But if, you know, they had taken the exam 5 years ago, practiced in Florida, and then left Florida, came here, and hadn't renewed or applied here, they would have to retest if it's been longer than 2 years.
Oh, that seems
so what's the intent on home inspector reciprocity?
Well, for endorsement, first of all, it has to be somebody who's licensed in another state. So it couldn't be a home inspector practicing in a state where there's no licensure.
Right.
And that state would have to have the same licensing requirements as Arizona.
Is that clear? They must be licensed in their home
yes,
state?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Okay,
and they have to be in good standing.
And what would the same licensing requirements mean?
Pass the national exam, have the
parallel inspection.
Parallel inspection.
Okay.
We'll have the experience. That's the whole point. You've been practicing 5 years.
Okay.
Out there practicing.
So
have
maybe
the
no
education.
Parallels, right?
The only thing they may not have is pools and spas, in which case they have to do pools and spas.
Well, no, that's not mandatory in our state.
Oh, that's true. It's not, yeah.
What?
Pools and spas is not a mandatory...
Yes.
But that's part of the education.
It's part of the education.
Okay. 4 hours
okay.
of education.
You don't have to include it in your inspection, but it is part of the education.
Right.
Okay. All right.
Is it specifically in this noting the pools and spas?
It's in another part of the law. So this says they have to meet the same requirements as Arizona. It has to be similar or greater than...
So we'll accept 5 years of experience over 30 parallel inspections, right?
Yes, the part of endorsement is you've already been working, you're in good standing, you've already gone through the education, mm-hmm. you've already gone through the testing.
Right.
You're just moving to another state.
Right.
Would they have to submit a list of, like when we first started, we had to submit a list of 100. What if they had their license for 5 years and never did one?
As long as it's in good standing, that's the...
Well, it would be because you haven't done it.
You haven't. Right.
You can't get in trouble with the board if you don't do any work.
Now how about report writing? In their application, will they need to submit a report?
No. The point is that they're out there practicing. They're a good.
So what we're saying is that everybody who's practicing successfully in Florida now can be licensed in Arizona.
If they meet.
And in every other state if they carry licensing. Okay?
But they won't.
Is this what we wanted?
No. We want to review one report, right?
Then you can't do endorsement if you're setting extra
an extra
steps.
Right, and I think that's why we shied away from this. Whose idea was this?
Well, keep in mind this is for everybody. It's not just about non-residents.
Right.
Could we look at the wording?
You want to be exempted?
I can tell you that the governor really likes the idea
of
facilitating licensure and to pull you out. Pulls you out as a group that doesn't want to facilitate.
It would be ugly. What about, so the very last page, item C on there, can you tell me what that is exactly saying there? This is one that the governor cares about too, I know, or I believe.
Oh, yes, okay.
So realtors are very hostile to felons getting home inspection licenses.
Right.
And there are specific requirements. If you are a convicted felon, you're going to have to cross a hurdle or two.
Right. Home inspectors do have that felony bar, which this can't trump. Right?
Well, but there's also the new law that...
Yeah.
There's a new law that essentially says you can't deny somebody with a criminal history a license unless it falls under very specific items.
We're still doing a background check.
We're still doing a background
right.
check, but
don't need them.
It's that's not as broad as...
So wait a minute. And specific. So I can tell you right now, because I negotiated all this, and this was their hill to die on, of course, because realtors don't want rapists and murderers.
Oh,
I don't care how they got out of prison, which they tend to get out of prison.
And those kinds of crimes are always a bar,
right.
even
so
with this new law.
That C sounds a little scary to me.
Well, but you do
what
have
trumps
that...
the C?
The reasonably related to the profession... And the seriousness of the crime, right?
Right, and successful demonstration of rehabilitation, good moral character, and ability to practice the profession safely. And that last one is going to be a pretty high bar if you're talking about somebody who is convicted of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, involved in a sex crime or something. It's going to, there are certain things that I think C is designed for people who have a felony past that may be reasonably related, but who have spent 20 years rehabilitating themselves and
not to like
that
be a lifetime.
I was 18 and I was stupid, and now I'm 40, so I wouldn't expect there to be too many cases that would come up that would really require this. But when one does, I would expect it probably will go under pretty substantial review.
Yeah, I think it's just segueing into the new law that a felony isn't automatically a denial.
Right.
Okay. And then, so as it relates to things that are, so they've already been mentioned, pools and spas are very different here than the majority of the country. So lacking that is trouble. If they lack pool and spa training, that's trouble. You believe we've taken care of that?
It says similar or greater than, so I'm assuming we could require that they fill in that gap if it's not there.
Right.
And then our other chronic problem, the reason our numbers of complaints versus our population is so bad is because of the report writing failures in many, many, many cases. So.
But then we go back to the 5 years on subsection B, which is that
meeting their state's requirements.
True.
But you just walked into a whole new world. So yeah, if we're not reviewing one report, you just opened up, boy, why don't you just double the number of complaints you get, you know?
Okay.
You're going to get more.
Arizona's actually on top of the home inspection industry. There aren't very many out there that even meet our standard. Some of them are really convoluted, like Texas is just crazy. But the but for us to just say, hey, you're licensed over there for 5 years, come on over, is a really
you
scary
want us to,
thing.
Because we can add you to paragraph D and just the alarm industry and the home inspectors.
Does it cross us up?
Do it.
Well, I don't want to get crossed up with...
Well, this is my concern. So you have somebody who's been practicing. They have to come here and do 30 parallel inspections, but they've been practicing 5 years. Is that...
We'd be happy to see one of his reports.
You cannot require one report? Is that true?
For all new applicants, we do, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But the intent of the endorsement statute was to make it easier for people who have been practicing in good standing in other states to come here. But if you're saying that Arizona has the most severe,
or just unique, it's just...
Yeah.
Actually, each state should be unique to match their inspection environment, but in this state, we are unique for sure, and so we require that your report meet this minimum
we
bar.
We could say that if, I mean, we'd have to look up the requirements in the states they're coming from to see if they're required to submit a report. But subsection A does say that the certification requirements have to be substantially equivalent to or greater than.
That doesn't tell us they have a good report.
It doesn't.
Yeah. Every report that you can buy, every report that you can buy out there has to be tweaked to meet our standard. Something has to be written in several different places. It's just not.
So what would it take to add a report review?
Another paragraph, basically.
If you look at the land surveyors, we could take their endorsement in terms of their exam and their experience, but they still have to take the state-specific exam, so we could do something similar.
And we could say home inspectors need to submit one report to demonstrate they meet the standards instead of 30.
And welcome to the report checklist, yeah.
We could do that.
And is there anything can be done on the pool and spa front? Because the majority...
We could put in that they have to demonstrate pool and spa. That would still, I think that would still, show that home inspectors are looking to make it easier to get licensed here.
Just we know the trouble spots.
Yeah.
If there was a separate pool and spa exam module, would that be helpful?
Yeah, mm-hmm. The thing is it doesn't say really how many hours you have to have. Spas,
we added four of that.
Four? Okay.
In education, yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Four
so
hours.
We could put that in.
But it's not mandatory.
It's not mandatory
to
do it.
They could choose not to inspect them.
Right.
Right.
But they would still take the education.
Of education.
Right.
Okay, so let's add a paragraph.
Yeah, we could do that. I think it still shows the spirit of removing barriers.
We usually don't meet in December, and this will get dropped in January.
Are we supposed to have... Are we supposed to be happy?
Yes.
We're bringing all these people in to do home inspections?
Yes.
Is that what the governor's looking for?
Yes.
Well,
Yeah, I think the whole thing is to try to make it reasonable with another state that's got, I mean, we had something initially with contiguous states, I thought. I don't know, maybe we didn't have anything. But the idea is if, you know, again, our bar is set fairly high, but let's say, you know, New Jersey, let's say they have a high bar set, they meet ours, somebody moving in, you know, to have to redo everything I think is somewhat onerous. We'd like to welcome them to the profession and just make sure that they're meeting our standards regarding their reporting. But I think the idea is to facilitate the mobility of people moving all around the country and to be able to use their skills here and not have to make it onerous to have to retake and redo everything. I think that's the spirit behind it.
So then realizing that if you create a bar, say, that includes pools and spas, then the schools have to teach that module because that could be a requirement. Do you do that? Do you break that out?
6.5 hours, yeah.
Perfect.
We already have that because we have, we were accepting schools that were approved by other states' boards, post-secondary boards, and they didn't include pools and spas, so we already have that situation where people have to
take
that
extra
module.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know another school that has a separate module. You can just do that one.
So I like the idea of adding just another quick paragraph.
I think just showing the intent.
Right.
Yeah, right.
It takes away somebody else coming in and putting something in law that won't work for you at all.
Right.
Yeah, so if we can just get a sample report in the application, I would be happy.
Okay.
I think we can do that.
And pools and spas, 4 hours.
Yeah. I think really the big issue is the 30 parallels if we people
at least
with experience don't have to do that.
Yeah, and I think that's reasonable. But
so
we're not requiring them to show an affidavit of 100 inspections or 30 for that matter.
I just brought that up as an example in the very beginning. But
was there a limit on how long they've been in business already? Was it
five years?
Okay.
They have to show good standing. They have to show that they only have been licensed
through the legislature to make sure.
Okay, so just a sample report.
Get it tweaked in committee if we have to.
Good.
Okay, that's great.
Good discussion.
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
we're glad we had this to show you.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Good work.
It was good timing.
You guys are on top of it. Okay, licensure by endorsement. And then that doesn't require a motion, right? That's just a staff?
Yeah, we'll take care of it.
Okay, and item 5I is possible revision of the report checklist supplement. It is November, which is the customary time frame to take another review of the report checklist supplement and revise if necessary.
Were you including, Mr. Chair, the pool and spa supplement also?
I guess we should. Those are always open.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I guess I had one question on the checklist, the primary checklist. And it's got to be in here, guys, but help me out. The old asterisk.
Yes,
sir.
The asterisk?
The asterisk.
It's on front page one,
So where is the asterisk defined?
Front page.
Because I know we added this after. So I'm on page 2 of our report checklist supplement.
It's page 1, bottom of the disclaimer, last paragraph.
That's the item. Oh, okay, an asterisk.
In this section.
In the section to follow me. Okay, I couldn't find that.
No, I hit it.
On this. You did a really good job.
I'm trying to
Could you get the type even smaller on that?
I'm trying to make the asterisk go invisible.
Component is not present. Okay. All right. Thank you. I was just having a hard time on that one.
PDF hold control and you can scroll
there. Yeah. Our guru.
You're awesome.
Isn't it good?
Awesome.
The two of these guys are excellent.
Yeah, I mean, I went through the checklist again. I didn't spend much time on the pool one, but I know it's been tweaked over the years. I didn't see anything.
Also simplified. It's probably been.
Yeah.
I've had no changes.
I have no changes for this either.
And I really don't either.
Which is a rare event. We've changed this virtually every year.
I know.
I don't want to knock on wood when you say it, but
let's put it on the website. in a big title paragraph like you did on the other, that there are no changes to the
right.
reports.
Right, but I think where we've gotten some of the best feedback on the changes has come from enforcement, right?
Right.
You know, they're going through and say, well, gee, this should be in there, but it's not, you know, on the enforcement side. So certainly if there's anything that you guys see that you think we should tweak on it, that the EACs are kind of button heads on, if there's a need to.
Well, they butt heads on.
Well, I know, they do anyway, just out of habit. But we want to make sure things are clear regarding the checklist. And so if there's you know, anything unclear on the checklist, we want to try to clean it up. But I think it's been fairly well refined here.
Yeah. So then is that we're all in agreement? No changes required?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm proud of you guys for reviewing it every year.
Yeah.
You missed the part where we said we don't ever want to see it again.
Okay. Now we're on to director's
report. Oh, director's report. You're the only one that appreciates my
I love this part.
Okay. As of last month, we had 4 home inspectors, 1 new application, 12 that were pending review, and 71 renewals. There are 844 home inspectors registered and 498 home inspector firms. Regarding enforcement actions against home inspectors, there are 34 pending cases. You guys have the highest number. 17 of those complaints are from this fiscal year, which started July 1st. 16 are still pending from 2018's fiscal year, and 1 is still pending from 2017. And that, I think, is it for the specific numbers. I do have a list of the cases, but I don't think you guys want to hear about that. We are still working with Asset to provide online renewals to our registrants, which would be great. They claim they can do it, online renewals and payment for that with credit cards, which hopefully we will see in at least the first quarter of the new year.
Good.
Fingers crossed. What we're proposing is we've asked for an additional budget of about $150,000 to actually provide coding to our new system or our current system that will automate that for us, because what they can do at Asset is provide it to the customers and then give us a list that we then manually have to go in and update our system with. And we would prefer to automate that. So like when Peter goes ahead and renews, it automatically codes up into our system. But I don't know that we're going to get the approval for that extra money because we're not on the current database of choice in state government. We're not using Salesforce. We have a Microsoft product. But we're still negotiating with the Office of Strategic Planning and Budgeting on that. So I'm hoping we'll at least be able to provide online renewals. And then if we have the money in a coming fiscal year, we're going to consider e-licensing as a giant project again, like we did with GL Solutions. But I'm not rushing into that because it's, you know, a challenge. What else can I tell you? Do you want to talk a little bit about the research that you did on home inspectors and how many complaints we get against new home inspectors versus those who have been previously registered? Do you remember that?
I'm happy to, but I don't have that.
Okay. Well, I do have a note, and correct me if I'm wrong. Doug researched a question that Dr. Angel, our board chair, posed regarding whether enforcement actions the board takes are taken against new or existing home inspectors and what the percentage was. So Doug reviewed a lot of statistics and reports and all.
Yeah, I think at Dr. Engel's direction, we went back 3 years and looked at all the cases, home inspector cases that were closed with discipline related to technical violations, not firms or any of that kind of stuff. And I don't remember how many we identified.
I have it. The board took 26 enforcement actions against home inspectors in the past 5 years. And of those cases, 9 home inspectors were licensed less than 5 years, and 17 were licensed more than 5 years. So what that says to me is 5 years ago is when Patty and I started, and we integrated the home inspectors into the licensing and enforcement process for everybody. Remember, they used to be a separate little group that Manny administered, and you guys, we didn't share any resources. Well, now we do. So I didn't know what went on when Manny did it. So it may be that the application process at that point wasn't as rigorous as it is now, and that's why some of the older licensees have had more discipline, because maybe their reports aren't up to snuff, maybe you know, they weren't required to do pools and spas, I don't know. But I thought that was an interesting
Is that adjusted figure. For the number of folks in each of those groups, though?
What do you mean?
Well, wouldn't that be...
It's about half and half, under 5 years and over 5 years.
It is?
It is.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But the parameters were wrong, and as I told the board in the meeting last month, the question that Dr. Engel asked was actually the wrong question. The parameters are wrong.
That was great. You're the only one that's ever challenged Dr. Engel publicly.
That's something to shock her.
Yeah, thank you for that. He wasn't there.
That's true.
But thank God he wasn't, right? There's a million reasons why an older inspector would have more complaints against him. They've been in business longer.
True, that is a good point.
Their volume.
And just
right.
volume.
But the right.
question, there's more of them and the volume's higher.
The question that would have been better asked was how many of the applications are being returned for revisions? And that to me was a much more important question. Since we have parallel guys out there doing parallels, training these guys, one would think that what they send to the state would be their best work, and if their best work is not meeting our minimum standard, then the guy who's training him was doing a bad job. And so the better question would be how many parallel inspectors that have been here for 5 years versus those that have not been here for 5 years have had their applicants' applications returned. You know what I'm saying? But God, I don't want staff to have to figure that out.
Thank you, Peter.
We're all looking at
so
Rob.
Difficult.
Rob loves statistics, though.
I'll do it for fun anyway.
Okay, there you go. Anyway, I'm sorry that when Dr. Engel was there asking that question, I didn't have the foresight to stand up and say it's the wrong question, but actually this is the right question.
That's all right. I give him hell about the Ina Road exit in Tucson, which remains perennially closed. So,
yeah, what's happening with Ina? It's my way to the southeast.
Right. He says it's opening in February, and it's on time and on budget, which, anyway.
If I bump heads with him again, that'll come up.
Off agenda, guys.
Yes.
So, I don't know if it... Is there some super important?
No, I just wanted clarifications on Doug's discussion there. He said he looked back 3 years, is that correct?
Yes.
And then out of those 3 years is where you found 60 or 26 violations, and 17 of those violations were inspectors with more than 5 years experience, correct? That's what you read.
Yeah, that's okay. What I had down.
All right, everybody.
Okay.
So we're just at this point anticipating new legislation that may affect the boards generally. Obviously, you know, we have the one specific piece of legislation that we'll be pursuing independently. But we're not alone in the regulation quandary. Lots of other states are also facing similar issues, including New Mexico and most recently New Mexico, but we're hoping that for now the governor's office appreciates us, and I've been making an effort to reach out and talk to the liaison there and answer any questions she has, and she's actually been working with us on our budget issues and other things. So I think they understand that we're trying to do the right thing here at the board, and that public protection is what all our professions are really concerned about, and that we are not trying to be aggressive and onerous and keep people from getting licensed. So hopefully that's appreciated, and all I can say is we have to wait and see what kind of legislation drops, but obviously, and then we'll just deal with it when we know. Mm-hmm. And if we get a heads up, that would be great, but I'm not expecting that we will. So.
Right. Okay. Well, let us know how we can help.
Yeah, thank you.
I have a question for a staff-related question. So, I don't know, it feels like just every year there's a new theme to the behavior in this industry, and this year seems to be the theme of sellers complaining, which is not our client. And so anybody can complain to the board and all that, but is there, and then somebody's got to review it. I've taken a case or two this year at least. That
Dan, I think Scott has an agenda.
Yeah, that might be an awesome idea for
future.
Future, okay. Well, the question is behaviorally, I'm sorry, I'll just save it, but just is staff barred from being able to screen for things that are completely outside our scope that mm-hmm. are being complained about?
Yes. Doug does it all the time.
Oh.
He triages complaints that we get to see if we have jurisdiction, right?
Correct. But keep in mind, I'm not a subject expert, so there's certain things that I think may be outside of the scope, but I think it's incumbent upon the EAC to tell the board that.
Yeah, if it's gray. But I guess my example would be a seller, or actually a buyer in this case is often the way it goes down, but a case where they're complaining about mold, something that's specifically excluded from the scope of a home inspection, mm-hmm. does
David,
that still
can we talk
David?
To you about this
still can't.
Yeah, that would be a great topic for a future agenda.
Yeah, we can do that. Okay.
We could talk to you after the meeting, too.
It's a hot button.
Yeah, okay. All right, then, anything else at all?
I'm finished with my report, unless you have questions.
Thank you for that.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you, Tom.
Right, nice.
And then agenda item number 7 is committee chairman's report. I don't have anything to report. So on to future agenda items, which I know we want to leave.
So leave the home builders on okay. there.
That's 5E.
And we wanted to add one to review for possible removal of substantive policy number 6. And then
we want to leave 5H.
5H.
Yeah, because there's going to be revisions to that.
5H.
Are you sure that we get to see a home inspection report?
And then maybe we can add one that would be along the lines of review of staff policy toward complaint scope or
complaint intake or
complaint intake or scope.
Yeah, that'd be cool. And you got number 6 substantive on there for next time? You want to do it?
Yeah, I think
review
so.
Review substantive policy number 6.
Yeah, maybe it needs to stay, but maybe, you know, we need to review it in here probably. I never get to see that, so it's in.
So review staff policy of complaint intake, is that what you said?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Perfect. And then anything else we can think of? All right. Future meetings. So historically, we take off December, and I think we do January.
Wait a minute, before you... Yeah. Okay.
And we are having our annual Christmas holiday luncheon, which you are, of course, invited to. It's on the 11th, which is Tuesday, December 11th, after the board meeting, probably around 11:30, 12 o'clock. So if you can come and you wish to come, you would be welcome.
Okay, I've heard 11:30 mentioned before, and I've never seen it in 15 years. So between 12 and 1
okay.
is actually, for those in attendance.
No, wait a minute.
You're new, Paul. There's no shot.
There's one time I came at 12 o'clock and missed it.
Oh, really? Okay. It could happen.
It could.
11:30 to 1 is the range. Okay.
Do you want to meet in January after
I would
legislation
say because
drops?
Especially this bill getting dropped and all that maybe would be... I don't know if that gets us off our cycle, but it doesn't really matter. So if we need it, we need it. So
IW is all going to be all that third week in January.
Third week. And the board meets in typically the third week, right?
We would be looking at January 22nd, right?
Just the fourth Tuesday.
That is, well, the first is actually a Tuesday, so... Maybe the 29th. We haven't approved the board meeting dates yet, so.
Why don't we look at, say, January 9th?
You want to go early?
Based off, since the first.
Yeah.
I'm good for the 9th.
The 9th?
Yeah, does that work?
I think I'm good.
What about you, Scott? Would you be good on the 9th? So, and you are talking about Wednesday, right?
Yes.
Okay.
This one's Wednesday, huh? Today's Wednesday.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't have my Tuesday, Thursday requests going on anymore. So.
Great.
All right. So we have that set, and then we just need one more motion.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
This meeting's adjourned at noon.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
That was fun.